All right, folks, welcome back to the latest Mountain West Wire football podcast. Team previews rolling on. Obviously, Jeremy here, if you don't know who it is, that's me, Matt, who are Fresno State, and what are you? What else do we say? Top 50 countdown writer and watch list season person?
I wear many hats in this offseason, yeah, trying to keep the content fresh for our many followers on social media, for our many website visitors, mwire.com.
Check it out there. Yes, we got a top 50 countdown going on. We have, like I said, what was it, Maxwell season list started today, or I guess Maxwell list released on what day, July 19th we're recording?
Yep, we're recording on the 19th, so by the time you hear this, the Davey O'Brien Award should be out. I believe the Blatnikoff Award, I don't have the exact order in front of me, but basically you're hearing this anytime within late July to early August, you're right smack dab in the middle of watch list season, so make sure to keep an eye on the website every single day, because I will be keeping track of who is getting nods and where.
Is there a long snapper award?
You know what? Yes, there is. The Patrick Manley Award.
That's right. Oh, because you put out there, give this guy the UNLV snapper, give him the award. Mm-hmm.
And the San Diego State guy, I think, was a finalist last year, Turner Bernard.
They're all special teams are part of football, as we know, sometimes I don't give it the appreciation it deserves at times.
That is correct.
But today, San Jose State football, talking about the Spartans. We got a fun tweet or some social thing we're going to bash and have fun with. So we got the Spartans who, can I just say, is it okay he's literally came out of nowhere to win the conference title last year? Is that safe to say? Do you approve?
I mean, I don't know that it does it justice, though.
More? It's not enough?
So, because here's the thing. Like, if you actually go back and look at how they performed in 2019, you know, they were not that far away from winning two or three more games. Like, I don't remember their exact win-loss record, but I believe it was, like, below 500.
They were 5-7.
Like, they still had work to do kind of around the edges. Like, the running game was still mostly a non-factor from week to week. The defense still gave up many big plays, but you know, they were out there, you know, winning rivalry games against Fresno State, giving Boise State a run for their money, you know, doing a lot of really positive things to give you an indication of the possibility, at least, that they could take the next step. And, you know, I guess maybe this is sort of an allusion to one of the questions that we got from one of our Boise State guys, Colin, who was asking, you know, do they regress to the mean or do they have another outlier season despite a tough West division?
We'll get there.
2020 wasn't an outlier season, though.
Yeah.
There was nothing about the season that was a fluke. They made real improvements on both sides of the ball. I mentioned it when we recorded our Air Force podcast recently about, you know, net points per drive. The only other time, and I think, you know, this Brian Primo's database, I think, stretches back like about 10 or 12 years or something like that. The only other time that San Jose State finished with a positive net points per drive was when they won 11 games back in 2012. Mm-hmm. You know, on offense, they were, you know, a top 50 team. On defense, they were a top 20 team. Best overall net figure in the conference. You know, they had a tremendous pass rush. They got, you know, better quarterback play than I think either of us would have expected going into last year. They made good on all of the potential that they had. And, you know, where they were unlucky 2 years ago, last year there really wasn't a lot of doubt. You know, because every single game that they won, save for the bowl game at the very end of the year where they were missing a lot of key pieces, don't forget, every single one of their wins last year was by at least 10 points.
I think the record is where it's coming from, not how they played. Because they were really quick. They were 8 points away from winning three more games the year before.
Mm-hmm.
Because they lost to Nevada by 3, UNLV by 3, Hawaii by 2. They nearly beat Boise State, lost by 10. I remember that San Diego State game at halftime. I remember still thinking about, like, they're knocking around the offensive and defensive line Aztecs. Like, out of 10-point games, that's that they'd win them all, but there's five games they were in the neighborhood to win. The only game they were not close to was Air Force and Tulsa. That's it.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that if you narrow the question a little bit or modify the question, you know, are they going to regress to the mean or do they have another outlier season? First of all, if they win again, it's not going to be an outlier because, yes, we've talked about it nearly every week. The West Division is going to be a tough draw week in and week out. But I see no reason to expect why the Spartans won't be in the mix again. And while, you know, there are some kind of narrowly defined regressions to the mean that are definitely on the table, which we'll talk about throughout the course of the podcast. You know, don't be shocked if they're back in the conference championship game. Like, this is a team that has built a very strong culture. They've cultivated a lot of talent on both sides of the ball. And even though they aren't without questions to address going into the season, they're going to be right there. They're going to be a factor.
I want to say yes, but it's the stupid history thing. They barely won ever. They've had two great seasons in like a 10-year stretch. You know what I mean?
I get what you're saying. And that's why I think their ability to keep Brent Brennan is a tremendous positive for them. And not only that, I think you also have to give a lot of credit to the coordinators who put in a lot of tremendous work. Like, they've benefited from continuity in a lot of different places. I think Brian Gunderson, the quarterback coach, left for UCLA. But other than that, I believe the staff is almost entirely intact. So, Brennan, of course, is the guy who sets the tone. Wears the flashy suits, has the positive attitude and the catchy slogans. But, Kevin McGivin has been out there, working, I don't want to say working miracles, but he's definitely earned his paycheck with the talent that he's been able to. And Derek Odom, I would venture to say the more anonymous of the two going into 2021, he's built a reputation for himself too, because, a lot of the star talent that we're seeing come to the forefront, it wasn't like they came out of nowhere. It was about a bunch of guys taking a big step forward.
It is, but I say it's kind of out of nowhere because they were so bad. People are talking like kick them out of the league. They're that bad.
You say that historically, yes. I mean, I know that I wrote that article. I think it was, I forget how long ago it was now, like 18 months or 2 years ago or something like that.
Here's a 2017 schedule. I just randomly picked the year. They lose to South Florida by 20. Texas 56-0. Utah 54-16. Utah State 61-10. 41-13 at UNLV. 41-20 at BYU. 52-7 San Diego State. 59-14. 42-14 Nevada, Colorado State. That's pitiful.
I mean, if you look at it in the historic sense, then yes, they came out of nowhere. But if you look at what was actually accomplished from year to year, especially within Brennan's tenure, I think that changes the answer quite a bit.
It does, because I look at 2018. Now, I might could go through the whole schedule, but there were plenty, like a 31-0 loss, 52-3. But your point is perfectly said. I think it's almost, I don't want to say more impressive, but the improvement from 18 to 19 was huge because – yeah, five games, but every game was close but one. And in 2020, it's like what we said with UNLV a couple years ago. Like, well, they keep losing, not as bad. They finally get better with Sanchez. They still didn't get, like, the stupid Howard game, whatever, kind of ruined a lot of things for them. But it's not that they came out of nowhere. It's that the improvement was possibly more drastic from 18 to 19 because, hey, in 19, we could figure out we're close. We're not super far off.
Yeah.
We're not getting blown out. And then 2020, yeah, going undefeated. That's the anomaly, I think, not that the wins were there.
Mm-hmm.
And the bowl game, lose half their coaches, all these players for COVID reasons and contact tracing. Yeah, they lose. They don't play Fresno. They get a rematch for Boise State that first time never came to be. We can both be correct on this, saying their improvement was shown from 18 to 19 to 20.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, going undefeated from five wins to losing record to winning record, that's where I think the people are like, well, can they do that again? Well, of course not. They're not going to go undefeated again. But, like, taking a step back, 8-4 for them would still be amazing if that's what the record ends up being.
Mm-hmm.
Should we get to this year?
Yeah, let's do it.
Should we get to the most important player returning on the team that almost left and didn't leave and decided to stay?
I mean, you could say that about any number of players.
I'm just saying that Nick Starkle. He's a pretty good.
Okay, well, we could start with quarterback. We usually do.
And that's the point. That's why I figured it's an easy way to go to it. I don't recall. Was there a chance he was going to leave? I don't think that was the case.
I mean, I would imagine for someone like him, who was already, I believe, a senior, the decision I would imagine would have mostly come down to where, NFL scouts or NFL personnel saw his future relative to other quarterbacks in the class. But, but if that wasn't the case and like a number of other individuals and like a number of other teams throughout the conference, if just groups of players decided they wanted to come make one last go of it, then, you know, more power to them. You know, if the NCAA has given them the super senior year, you might as well take advantage of it and run it back and see if you can do this all over again.
For him, because I don't know how much of an NFL guy he really is, and who cares? We don't care about the NFL here all that much. He played amazing last year. He third school. Should we get to the message of what was sent, the stupidity of people on social media or done?
Yeah, we could talk about that for a moment.
We had discussed before. Did you find out who sent that, or did we care?
No, I mean, I don't know if it matters that much. It was kind of a stupid Instagram post. But the idea was essentially somebody put some post out there about, you know, the worst SEC quarterbacks that every team has had since, I think it was 2010. And somehow Starkle ended up as the pick for both Arkansas and Texas A&M. And I was wondering, like, if they saw what happened, you know, elsewhere in the Chad Morris years in Fayetteville.
Or when San Jose State beat Arkansas.
Or if they ever watched Trevor Knight at Texas A&M. But, you know, to that post's point, I think, if you balanced kind of the track record that the Spartans coaching staff had built for themselves in the 3 years prior versus what you had seen from Starkle, you know, year in and year out for like the first 3 years of his collegiate career, it was definitely up and down. You know, his first year as a starter at A&M was not that bad though, which is where, you know, that part of the post in particular didn't really make a lot of sense to me.
Yeah.
But I could see where you might wonder, okay, well, is he going to be the guy to come in and be as effective as Josh Love was? You know, now you look back at the season and he throws for, you know, 2,100 yards, completes 64% of his passes, 17 touchdowns against just 7 interceptions. The answer is an emphatic yes. You know, he was the perfect engineer for what this offense needed.
Here's the funny thing, too. I don't have the final score here for some reason. I'm looking at his game log from Texas A&M. I guess it's their bowl game when he played Wake Forest.
Mm-hmm.
He was 42 of 63, 499 yards, 4 touchdowns and a pick, and they lost the game. That doesn't seem like it's an issue with him, right?
Can you imagine going from Kevin Sumlin to Chad Morris to Brent Brennan now?
55-52 that game, if you're wondering. So,
you would have raised an eyebrow at that progression of head coaches a couple of years ago, but you won't now because, you know, I don't even know what Chad Morris is doing anymore.
And
Kevin Sumlin just got fired from Arizona over the offseason. So I think it speaks to the coaching staff. I think that Starkle was able to step in and the offense didn't really miss a beat.
Yeah, because we saw what Love did. I remember watching when he played the University of Utah. He had that knee injury at halftime. Like, he was – San Jose State wasn't going to be Utah because the defense was too good and it wasn't going to happen. But that first half, it was like, a one-score game, a close game. He was lighting up Utah's secondary because all they do is man coverage no matter what. Even if Coach Woody Hammond is stubborn and they're getting beat, he'll still stick with it. And he was beating those DBs who are probably in the NFL right now. I don't know if it was – I can't think of any names at the moment, but there were guys who were in the NFL from that position. He was torching them apart, going deep, finding guys downfield open.
Mm-hmm.
But he came in. We weren't sure because we were talking about Nick Nash, too. Like, he would come in, maybe run the ball, dual threat guy to get split time, which rarely happened, if ever. Like, it was only a handful of plays here or there. But the post is dumb because, first off, Alabama's pretty good in the SEC, right?
Mm-hmm.
And freaking Arkansas, as we pointed out before, has never won an SEC title. So it's like, how are you going to put on him like the worst guy since 2010 when if you look at the years outside of their Cotton Bowl year 2011, they've had three winning records, three winning seasons.
Apologies to our old acquaintance, Chris Turner, by the way, if he happens to be listening to this. He's the only Arkansas fan that I know.
Chris, maybe you are. I hope you're doing well in your radio. I think he's doing news radio in Missouri at the moment back there. Because he did Hawaii coverage for us, went to University of Missouri. So he's a diehard SEC guy too, maybe, right? Both teams.
Mm-hmm.
But my point being, like, who cares? It's freaking Arkansas. They've been trashed in college football forever. They were pretty good, like, in the late 80s to 2000. Like, they never won an SEC title. I don't even know how many Southwest Conference titles they won. They're more famous probably for having Lou Holtz as one of their head coaches back in the 80s. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then Texas A&M, maybe. But look how many quarterbacks they went through. I forget who they played. Like, Texas A&M played South Carolina, like the first game in the SEC Network, and the guy was like, he's going to win the Heisman. He beat up on South Carolina. He ended up being trash and garbage.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember, probably the year after Nick Starkle was there or whatever, 2018. But The post is dumb because it's just somebody to pick on because he transferred three schools. But who has the last laugh? Yeah, what would you rather have, but look at what he did for a program. It wasn't all just him, but he comes in and plays extremely well, one of the best quarterbacks in the conference. You're in Arkansas, there's no talent there. Texas A&M probably should be better, but when I point out that final game he had, he was never given a chance to be the starter the next year, really. Mm-hmm. So it's like, whatever. It's just a dumb thing to, I don't know. It's like, oh, make one guy transfer twice. Oh, he's a two-time guy, worst quarterback ever. They probably just saw he played on two teams. And go, let's put him in there because the record wasn't very good. Mm-hmm. Despite when he actually played well at Texas A&M, the defense was trash. And that should be more concerning if you're a Texas A&M fan. Defense is kind of the thing, or used to be. But mm-hmm. it's just stupid, right? It's dumb. Yeah. So Nick Sark will got your back, right?
Exactly.
And he has a conference title, which neither Texas A&M or Arkansas can say in their respective conferences ever.
That is
ever,
true.
Ever. Just saying. I don't care if A&M's been there for 10 years. What else about the quarterback? Like, what? The quarterback position's deep. Carson Strong was our player of the year first team. You have Nick Starkle. You have, I went through the whole list here. Why am I blanking on all these guys? But he's up there as one of the best quarterbacks, but it's going to be quite a few. Mm-hmm. Is he going to be better than Carson Strong? Probably not, just because what they do. But he's going to be a top three quarterback minimum in the whole league.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of where he set the floor. And I think more importantly for the Spartans, they learned that they can win without him too last year, where, you know, he got banged up in that game against San Diego State. And Nash, who you mentioned a minute ago, came in and basically led them to come from behind victory off the bench. And, you know, obviously Nash brings a different skill set. He's definitely more of a runner than Starkle is typically. But, you know, you look at what he's done over the past two seasons combined, and you're looking at a guy who's completed well over 60% of his passes mm-hmm. and also averages about 5.5 yards per carry, before adjusting for sacks. That's pretty good backup quarterback material. And so, like, if he gets, you know, thrust into another kind of situation like that, I think that they can feel better that the offense isn't necessarily going to fall off a cliff if Starkle happens to get banged up again at any point.
Yeah, it's their bench is good. Like, I mean, they can win without him, but still obviously prefer Starkle over Nash because Nash kind of – he's a different type of QB as well a little bit because he runs a little bit more mobile. But that can also throw teams a bit when they're preparing for Nick Starkle. And, oh, crap, this other guy comes in who we rarely prepared for because he came in as well, wasn't 100% Starkle every game. There's occasionally here and there. Nick Nash would come in for not many plays, but he'd come in here or there just to – mix things up and it's kind of, hey, defense, what do you got? So that's an area, too. I don't think they'd use more of it, but it's an area of all the teams in the league, there's very few teams that have, like, two quarterbacks. Okay, we're good, because Boise probably has two quarterbacks. Air Force will need two at some point. San Diego State has nothing. Hawaii just has the one to shave on Cordero. New Mexico, we'll see if it's – was it Terry Wilson from Kentucky? But as for, like, two quarterbacks, there's not many – Wyoming has it as well, but it's like three teams that could say, well, if our starter isn't able to play for a little bit, we'll probably be okay. Mm-hmm. And Spartans are number one in that list, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're going to make the case that there's improvement to be made, it's like very much on like the micro level, let's say. Because, mm-hmm. you know, if you look at, for example, and I think this is sort of a reflection of the, you know, a larger wrinkle that given the amount of wins that they piled up last year may have gotten overlooked a little bit, but you know, they only converted 50% of their red zone opportunities into touchdowns last year. And you know, while Starkle was, you know, 8 touchdowns, 0 interceptions, so he wasn't making like the obvious mistakes in there, he only completed 50% of his passes as well. And so if you compare that to some of the other quarterbacks who saw a big number of opportunities, you're like, you know, that, and it's not to say that that's not something that other quarterbacks in the conference can improve on, but I think if you're looking for that little extra edge, you know, you think that, you know, as good as they were last year, they may have left some things on the table. And, yeah. And if they can work that out where, you know, and again, you talk about incremental improvements, if he's completing 60% of his passes instead of 50 and, you know, taking a similar kind of care of the football, you know, that makes him maybe the most lethal quarterback in the conference if he can make that improvement.
I guess so, a few, because we got Carson Strong has to fade to Cole Turner every time. That's always right there. So, but you're right, if you get even just a little bit better in that red zone, and part of it too, like, I don't, like, that, like, looking at what he does downfield, like, 8.5 yards attempt is right behind, like, Jay Kaner.
There's more than catch and run, though.
Yeah, more than Carson Strong, which you would think if it's catch and run, why can't those passes work in the red zone as well?
Mm-hmm.
I guess the obviously the field's
less room to defend,
yeah, less room to defend. So guys are there. So if you're doing a little swing pass or a shortish pass, but you'd still think if your pass, like say it's catch and run, it's a 4 yard catch, you would still do a couple of those to get in the end zone. But just tweak with the offense, do a couple plays here or there. You have Tyler Nevins, other year running back, to do a few more things. But yeah, get a slightly better, because his normal percentage is, like you said, just it's what, 64%, and so it's. There's no concern, but if we want to find something to really nitpick, right, to get to where, hey, work on this.
Yeah, I mean, if you're looking for a more kind of, I don't want to say glaring. I feel like that's not necessarily the most accurate word. But if you're looking for something that's like a potential red flag for the offense, it's how real was the improvement with the running game last year? Because I think the answer varies depending on how you slice it, because there was that mid-season surge in that, and especially in that three-game stretch, you know, home versus UNLV, at Hawaii, you know, and then the neutral game site against Nevada to end the year, or to
try
for the regular season.
They
averaged over 6 yards a carry in those three games. But, you know, outside of that stretch, they failed to crack 4 yards per carry. You know, they scuffled against Air Force, they scuffled against San Diego State, you know, they scuffled on the ground against Boise State, and again, some of that doesn't have, you know, some of that is adjusted a little bit for sacks, but that doesn't necessarily explain the entire picture, which we'll get to that more in a minute when we talk about the offensive line. So I think that, you know, you all of a sudden when you look at the running game, and I think we were both on the same page that Starkle's going to be fine.
Mm-hmm.
But I still want to see a little more from that duo of Tyler Nevins and Kyrie Robinson.
Yeah, because Nevins, you mentioned those two games, he averaged 7.8 per carry, but only 66 attempts. But it's this game stretch where he had a ton of carries, like 15 carries versus Hawaii, 9.5 yards attempt.
Not only that, he had a handful of really big runs in that stretch that I think skews the overall figures and makes the per carry average a little bit deceptive, because, you know, even with it, I think they were still only like, you know, fourth in the conference, you know, and way far behind some of the other teams that tend to be a little more run heavy, like Air Force and Wyoming.
Well, let's just say this: two games in those two games, Hawaii, Nevada hit well almost over 2/3 of his yards.
Yeah, so I mean, obviously they were able to get by without it. You know, with a very efficient passing game that never really took any breaks all year long.
Okay.
But, you know, I think, you know, given the questions at wide receiver, which again, we'll get to that in a minute as well, that I think makes those two maybe the most important people on the offense, because it wasn't that long ago, like going back to 2019,
which we talked about
at the very beginning.
Oh, terrible.
They scuffled big time that year. And I think, you know, that, you know, rather than the incremental improvements that we talked about with Starkle, I think it's just a matter of taking another step forward all the way around.
But it's also, they average one rushing touchdown per game.
Yeah.
So they put 8 games, 8 touchdowns, compared to, okay, I don't want to use Air Force, that's a bad example. Even Wyoming, not the best example of what they do, but 16 in 6 games, New Mexico 12-7. Their rushing was... Only team worse was Utah State, who had 4 touchdowns in 6 games for converting touchdowns. That's not everything, but something to look at when Fresno State had 12 TDs in 6 games, or Boise 13 and 7.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Well, here's the comp you want to look at. We talked about Nevada already. And I think, you know, that is sort of like the flip side of where the stats can sometimes deceive you a little bit, because, you know, Nevada actually was worse on a per carry basis, 4.3 yards, and they only scored 7 touchdowns on the ground. But I don't know if anybody outside of the San Jose State fan base would say that Nevada's running game wasn't in better shape or maybe a bigger strength for that offense going into 2021. I guess that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, that's their biggest improvement they can make, right? I think.
Yeah, I would say so.
Or especially
since, you know, other analysts have pointed out that, you know, where they were really pass heavy in the Josh Love years, they started to get a little more balanced last year.
And that could be Nick Nash going there a little bit. But the numbers, like, if you look at the yards per game, it's like you mentioned, it's fine. But that there's a couple games stretched Nevada, Hawaii skews it wildly, where if they were to get the exact same production, even out almost, they'd be even better almost, even if they maybe get another touchdown here or there. Because 4.49, it's not bad. That's fine. But, like, even they get 4.55 or just, like, a half yard of carry or so, get closer to 5 or even 4.0, just a little bit.
Well, and that's why I'm wondering. Like,
just a little bit. That's all it is. Just a little bit.
And this sort of leads into another question that we got from one of our Twitter followers about, you know, with being such like a veteran team, are there young guys that could potentially break through? And I'm thinking about a guy like Shamar Garrett as maybe the first example of someone who could take on a bigger role. Obviously, I think we saw him more as a kick returner last year, and maybe Nevada fans are shuddering about remembering how that game really turned on his kick six against the Wolfpack last year.
Yep.
But, you know, if San Jose State finds himself in a situation where, you know, Nevins and Robinson are scuffling a little bit, maybe they do give Garrett a few more touches per game because they want to see what he can do with the ball in his hands.
Well, when he played versus New Mexico, he had two rushes, 14 yards, and two catches, 27 yards. So
yeah, it wasn't necessarily his primary responsibility.
Yeah, that's his best game.
There's a chance for him to carve out a role for himself.
Yeah, let's look at his numbers. He didn't play every game. Let's look at his primary from scrimmage numbers there, actual offensive plays, not special teams. But favorite third guy, just do a little bit more. Like, he could be a clear potential breakout guy, but like Harry Robinson and the guys above him, Nevins, are there. It never hurts to have depth. Like, if he gives them, what, 5 carries in game and gets like 20 yards a game, like average throughout, like, he gets, 50 carries for the year, 60 carries, and gets 300 or 400 yards. That's a good supplement guy who gets almost 5 yards. If 5 yards might be a bit much to ask, but give me anywhere from 3 to 6 carries and almost 20 yards a game. Mm-hmm. That's probably fine. Average, that's probably fine. And he'll break through here and there because if he, like you mentioned, return game, what he can do, if he catches a swing pass out of the backfield or gets space on the sweep, that could allow for, like, a huge run. And they and like what Nevins did last year, those couple of games – where I don't have the exact yardage like those big plays, but give him that room and go for it. Like, I'm not saying he'll do it, but he has the potential to do it as coming in as a, still a freshman technically, second-year player, however you want to spin it out there. And there's potential. That's a good catch to see who could be one of those guys who could step up to – he might have a game where he goes 8 for 75, maybe not that much, but so, you know, I mean, something – pretty big with like a 40-yard run, 6 carries, and like 55 yards and a touchdown. Like, that's something would be beneficial for them. And he's a guy who I could see that happening where he's one game, and then other games he's quiet, like 3 for 12.
Yeah, I could see that too.
It's I'm going all over the place. But so he's a third running back. What do you expect from him? You'll see some guys who have one big game. Like, that's why I was going through game by game. Whereas the Mexico game, well, it was a fairly close game, 17 points, and he – played reasonably well. What opportunities he had?
Yeah, and I think another part of that question sort of makes for a really nice pivot toward talking about the wide receivers, because I think if you're looking for another position, maybe the position on this year's Spartans team where young guys could step up and take on a bigger role, it's definitely this, because, you know, Trey Walker's gone to the NFL, so is Bailey Gaither. And Chris Benigni of the Athletic pointed out that those two combined for 56% of San Jose State's receiving yards in 2020.
They did about 1,400 yards.
that doesn't necessarily mean that they're doomed, but it means that, you know, a number of guys are going to have to step up to fill the breach, and some of the faces are, some of the names are a little more recognizable than others, but I think there's going to be
so hit 5 touchdowns, led the team. So there's that.
5 catches on 20 touchdowns. Or 20 catches, excuse me.
That'd be impressive. But Isaiah Hamilton, he'd be there. Kyrie Robinson out of the backfield. 19 catches, was fourth on the team. So that's where the running game running backs could come into play, especially him. And maybe that's where Garrett can go from 4 to 15.
Can we talk more about Isaiah Hamilton for a moment?
Of course. I'm just bouncing around. What do you want to talk about him? He's pretty good. 16 yards a catch. Good.
And you know what, looking back at 2020, I was sort of surprised that he didn't see as many targets as I expected. Maybe that was a consequence of Gaither and Walker being so explosive on the outside. But I think he's a name for other Mountain West fan bases to know, because, you know, even though he's been kind of like the third option in the Spartans offense over the last couple of years, when you look at what he did between 2019 and 2020, mm-hmm. You're looking at a guy who's, you know, 56 catches, 924 yards. That's a 16.5 yard per catch average. And he's also scored 6 touchdowns as well. So, like, if you were to put those two seasons together, like, that's pretty good. And now he's being asked to step up into one of the more primary roles. It would not shock me if he put up a Gaither or a Walker type line this year. I think if I were looking for anybody in this unit to do it, it's probably him.
Well, look at 2019. Go ahead.
Oh, no, we can talk more about the other names in a minute if you had something.
I was just saying about him. About 2019, he was the 43 catches, 4 TDs, more than Trey Walker, right there, like 700 yards. Like you mentioned, the combined, but 43 for 718. Third leading receiver, like, why can't he do what Trey Walker did a couple years ago with, like, almost 80 catches and 1,000 yards?
Exactly.
And that was with Josh Love and Nick Starkle's as good or better.
And while it wasn't necessarily in a situation that they wanted to have to deal with, you know, the fact that the Arizona Bowl ended up playing out the way that it did, you know, maybe that works to this team's benefit in the long run, because we got to see some more of those options when the names at the top were all of a sudden, you know, missing in action. So, you know, Jermaine Braddock, you know, Isaiah Holiness, Andre Crump, those are three guys right there who saw a lot of playing time in that bowl game, and it would not shock me. Like, I don't know that there's necessarily room for more than one all-conference type performer, but it would not shock me if they ended up being able to spread the ball around to those four guys, and, you know, three of them end up catching somewhere between like 30 and 40 catches for, you know, 400 to 500 yards, something like that. I don't think this necessarily needs to be the most explosive offense, the big play offense. As long as it's efficient, I think that's really what they were after last year, and I think there's plenty of potential for them to do that again. Because, like I said, we may not be familiar with all the names, but that doesn't mean they don't have the ability to step up and replace the guys that are missing now.
And Mr. Jermaine Braddock in the bowl game, touchdown, 4 catches.
There you go.
Backup tight end Dominic Mazzotti. Like, they could get two all-conference guys, tight end, receiver, can fudge a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Derek Deese, which it's difficult with what Colorado State has, what other teams have at tight end. That'll be Trey McBride. That'll be tough to get around because there's some pretty good tight ends. But you have him. You have a good backup, Mazzotti. Braddock had the good bowl game. You have Walker's gone. But, like, Isaiah Hamilton, yeah, whatever, did okay. Still had the 25-yard catch in the bowl game. You're right. I think that's the main thing about the unit, where Hamilton is a known name. He just wasn't a huge star last year. But the year before, and like, how many player teams don't have a 40-plus? Your third receiver have 40-plus catches.
Mm-hmm.
And in a year, you went freaking 5-7.
Yeah, I think if I'm going to accurately answer that question, though, if you're looking for a deep cut that might be worth keeping your eye on and see how he does in fall camp, I keep an eye on Malachi Miller.
Okay.
Sophomore from Oakland, 6'4", 195.
Okay.
Which is a very different kind of target than what Gaither and Walker brought to the table.
And 5'11".
Yeah, and so, you know, him and Donald McKinney, who was a JUCO transfer, I believe, in their most recent recruiting class, you know, McKinney's also 6'3", 195, so they could give him a couple bigger targets to take shots down the field, which wasn't necessarily an element to the offense that they needed a lot of, but if they find ways to make use of it going into 2021, that could give them a different element to attack defenses with it. You know, that would be hard to prepare for just looking at film from last year's team.
Yeah, it's a unit. I think you sound perfectly. We know a couple names, but the going to three or four deep, we'll figure out number two and three because people know Hamilton. I don't think he's a secret. It's just he wasn't Walker and Gaither last year. Mm-hmm. So that'll be a good unit. And like tight end, Derek Deese, this will be, the running game is the big concern. So let's go to the offensive line because that's obviously going to help with the running game, the sack rate, keeping the quarterbacks upright, don't get injured, don't have injuries, keep a consistent unit. That's an area where it's dumb as it is, like the most important position just about, because if you don't have time to throw a run, well, sucks to be you, right? You're running for your life with your head cut off, and here comes Nick Nash trying to make something happen.
Well, and it helps that they're bringing all five starters back.
That's right. They have, they do have everybody back. Sorry, I was looking at something wrong else. Yeah, they bring back, Kyle Hopi, Tyler Stephen, and everybody's back. All five guys off a unit where, I'm thinking about it, like my record, it might be a Fresno State situation again where I'm like, oh, shoot, maybe I need to make some adjustments here.
Well, and Jack Snyder, I think, is the guy who's received a lot of off-season buzz. I think it was Pro Football Focus who, I forget the exact parameters, so forgive me that I don't remember this accurately. But he was, I think, one of the top returning players in the Mountain West, just by virtue of according to their grading system. You know, he made a huge jump from his junior to a senior year. Now he, like Starkle, he's one of those guys who's back as a super senior. But I think it sort of does a disservice to the other guys. You mentioned Hoppy and Stevens, Jamie Navarro, and Trevor Robbins and Jesse Chamberlain. You know, those are six guys right there who have all seen playing time over the last couple of years. And it's a testament, I would say, to the fact that they've really worked well as a unit. You know, going back to, you know, how well they worked with Starkle in particular, you know, I think maybe if there's one thing to keep an eye on is, are they going to be as good at protecting the quarterback again this year? Because, you know, their 2.2 sack rate, their sack rate, 2.2% sack rate allowed. That's what I meant to say.
Okay, that's pretty good.
Was sixth nationally.
Yeah, solid, very good.
and I think that it helps that continuity matters in a case like that. But, you know, going back to the earlier conversation about the running game, I think there's still work to be done because you can't necessarily pin all that kind of underperformance on the runners. So by line yards per carry, for example, they were only 100th across the country last year. You know, opportunity rate, which is just getting runners to the second level, they were 90th. Power success rate, short yardage situations, 124th. And 103rd in stuff rate. So, you know, their runners, despite the success that Nevins and Robinson had in that stretch, you know, there was long stretches where it was sort of a continuation of what we had seen a couple of years before.
That, like, you kept telling me they'll be good, they'll be great. I'm like, we'll see. It's 90 to change.
I think they will be good, but I think there's still work to be done, especially with the running game. And I think that falls on both the runners and the offensive line.
It does, but I didn't research. I'm like, before, I'm like, oh, whatever. They'll get, what it be fine. They'll be okay. But losing the top, like, my concern, I guess, offensively would be running game. And I want to say receivers a little bit because it's still difficult to replace that type of talent and production.
Yeah.
And so when we say, well, just some other name will step up, when have they really ever done that? Some guy step up. Like Nick Starkle from Josh Love, you know what I mean? Maybe a couple running backs. Like, that is a concern. I see where there's room. I'm like, if you kind of pull open the keyhole a little bit, like, okay, I see some room there where that could happen. I'm just may not be 100% sold it's going to happen. However, if you have a quarterback as good as Nick Starkle, also, Starkle, like, again, it's dumb to say, but you get another full offseason to prepare to come in and play because he was there in 2019. Like, what was 2018? It was Josh Love.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he comes in 2019. 2019-20, he had no offseason to practice and prepare, and look what he did. Now imagine what he has to get into his new receivers. Like, that, it goes for every team. It's not to say this is a special scenario, like with returning talent. Every team has returning talent. It's how it'll be used. But I think in this case, for how good he was last year, the offensive line's all back. My big concern in offense is more consistent running game because it's been garbage outside of last year. Hasn't been very good for the most part. Like, that's all the joke we made. Well, they have negative yards per carry, it seems like, for the rushing attack. But that's my big thing, consistent running game, which I'm more confident in that just because we know who's there than the receiving game. But I'm also not confident, if that makes sense, that I know a receiver is going to step up because I think Hamilton will be the guy. Derek Reese will be there. You have Kyrie Robinson. He'll get – like, he had, 19 catches in eight games. That's, two to three game. That could end up being, almost a full season, almost 30 catches, almost double his output. So 40 catches. So if your running back gets 40 catches, that's a pretty big deal. It'll be there. I just don't know who it is, and that's where I'm still a little bit hesitant of what the offense could be.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit. Because there's a reason. That's all. Because, yeah. You ready for defense?
Let's do it.
Oh, boy. They have some players coming back. They have our preseason defensive player of the year, correct?
Mm-hmm. That is correct.
Cade Hall, linebacker. Or wait, sorry. Is he technically a linebacker?
He's a defensive end.
Sorry, you do a good job of all the positions, flex inside linebacker, outside linebacker, defensive end. So, whatever. He's defensive player of the year. I say linebacker, but defensive end, that's what he officially is. And he was one of the guys who did not play in the bowl game last year.
Mm-hmm.
You had him, you have a couple coaches. So what is your – let's just start with his position, like the defensive line, defensive end. Like for with them coming back, you have Villani Fajoco as well, Cade Hall clearly. They need a new nose tackle essentially, but Cade Hall is like – he's going to be the sack king of the conference again possibly.
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to Hall in particular, if you were paying attention, you saw this coming. Because, you know, 2 years ago he had 4.5 sacks, three years ago in 2018. And then I think the year before, or the year after that, he had 8 sacks. So, you know, him jumping to be a defensive player of the year caliber type guy was sort of like a natural progression, I would say. I think, you know, that's not to say he was had a lot of company in that regard. I think, you know, Fajoco's emergence was definitely more of a pleasant surprise. You know, the fact that they finished 1-2 in the Mountain West in terms of sacks. I don't think anybody would have seen that coming. I mean, I could have seen Paul taking a step forward. I always thought he kind of flew under the radar a little bit, but I did not expect him to get, you know, bookended by another pass rushing force.
I think with Hall, it was the sacks that went up where he had very few sacks with TFLs.
Mm-hmm.
And then the sack went up to 10 and then whatever else he had in TFL. Sorry, I don't have in front of him. I thought he did 10 and 12. Like his TFLs, that's what you mentioned.
Oh, yeah, that might have been what I was thinking of.
Yeah. I looked through him, but that's still great. It's just it's one step sooner, better to get the sack. Like his, your point still stands where he had 4.5, 8.5, or 4.5, 8, 12. The sacks were minimal, but that's just the next progression. Like you could still see that coming. Like he's in the backfield all the time. Now it's getting the backfield half a second quicker to get the quarterback before he can hand the ball off or make a play. But you're right with Fajoco, where what he was doing, it's a bit of a, well, who's this guy? And look what he does.
Yeah. And the interior is also not too shabby. Like obviously they don't have the big names in the middle of the trenches, but you know, Jake Akiba was a pretty highly regarded JUCO transfer in the 2020 recruiting class. You know, he held his own. Lando Gray, and as part of that rotation, also played really well. And I think if you're looking for another kind of under the radar guy, like he's not a youngster, but you know, Noah Wright came on pretty strong in the second half of last year. He only had 2 sacks, but you know, they were against Nevada and Boise State in that conference championship game.
Big time.
And he is 6'5" and 315 pounds.
Oh boy.
You know, between he and Kakiva in particular, that is a lot of beef in the middle of that defensive line. And also, so, you know, if you're looking for a guy who could potentially, you know, be a breakout candidate, I would say, you know, pencil right in or put him on your list. He could be one of those guys.
Yeah, they also returned 10 of 11 starters, or Wright may not even be a starter. Like, he'd be, no, Wright will be potentially, but he'll get plenty of playing time. But they bring all those 10, everybody back, they lose a nose tackle, but that's it. And the defense, like when you look at who they're playing and what they did last year, like they were okay, freaking defensive player of the year. What else do you want to say? You know what I mean? Like I'm trying to pull up their record here, their points and stuff. But defensive player of the year, they have guys who, like you mentioned, everybody gets in the backfield. They sacks, TFLs. They, the games like, what am I looking here? Nevada only 20 points versus Nevada. Like, mm-hmm. that's huge. 20 versus Boise State. Sorry, I'm looking up a couple things here. Three to five things at once. But, like, the points they gave up, Aztecs, they beat them 28-17, but that was when San Diego State was playing really well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, before Greg Bell really got hurt. Like, Air Force only scored 6 points. Like, the defense did not allow too many points. Like, 20-something a game, like, their average, I don't have in front of me, but I'm just looking at their per game. But giving up about 20 points a game is fine. You know what I mean? When you're scoring 30 to 40, almost 40, I guess.
Like, yeah, I think having that deep defensive line in particular, I think it's going to make it a lot easier for the linebackers to make an impact. And because I think if you're looking for one of those things that could potentially fall one way or the other, you know, if we're talking about regression to the mean, like, what do you do when you look at some of the numbers they put up last year and they were right at the mean? And I'm thinking particularly of, like, of you know, power success rate on defense and stuff rate on defense, where they were right around the national average. So they were solid, if not necessarily spectacular. You know, 63rd and 61st, respectively. So with that solid and deep defensive line up front, like, we know Kyle Harmon is pretty good.
Yeah.
Right? And we also know that they're bringing back everybody who had any kind of hand, I think, save for, like, Trey Webb, as far as stringing any kind of tackles together last year. But I think you as a unit, we know Kyle Harmon. What do we really know about the other guys who could potentially make an impact? Because, you know, Ali Matau, Hadari Darden, Tyson Parker, we've seen them in stretches. They haven't been quite as prolific as Harmon. You know, Harmon had, I think, 78 tackles, and nobody else in that crew that, as you mentioned, had, if I'm looking at it correctly, more than 34. So Harmon had twice as many tackles as the next guy. I mean, I don't know if that's necessarily the situation that you want to find yourself in, but I think, you know, if that defensive line can wreak havoc up front, like, these don't necessarily need to be all conference dudes behind him in order to be effective. I think they just need to, you know, be able to clean up in an efficient manner. And because it could be the difference between setting opponents up with, like, I don't know, let's say second and seven versus, like, second and five. You know, the former situation will definitely put this defense in a better overall position to, you know, force a punt, create a turnover, whatever.
I also should point out, you mentioned their double Harmon. Number 2, 3, and 4 were defensive backs and total tackles.
Mm-hmm.
That probably needs to change a bit.
Maybe a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, like, Fajoko, maybe he'll go to 45 tackles. Like, that's not what you really want, because they don't run that 4-2-5 where you have all the safeties or DBs.
No, they run like a 3-4.
I know, that's the point. Like, they don't have the safeties or whatever who'll come up and be essentially a pseudo linebacker occasionally. Mm-hmm. So that's an area where, like, more disruption up front, like, because what this means when you have your safeties, it could mean it's not necessarily a bad thing. It could mean your safeties are that good they can play close coverage and don't have to, they're not given cushion all the time. Or your safeties, they do coordinated safety blitzes, they disguise coverages, which is kind of what they do. If you're a good team, your defense isn't going to be playing every time. But I would prefer to have a linebacker or defensive end have more tackles than one of my safeties who had 50.
Mm-hmm.
That's just a nitpicking, but if you look at most teams that are good, you might have one DB up there, but 2, 3, and 4, that's kind of not a concern, but you'd like that to maybe bring another linebacker or a tackle up higher.
Yeah, almost. I get what you're saying.
Hey, we're nitpicking here a bit because they were good last year, and why it changed too much.
There you go.
So we got the linebacker. Like, what about their secondary? They bring everybody back. Like, one of those guys I mentioned, Trey Webb, second team in tackles, he's back. But
no, Trey Webb went to the transfer portal.
Oh, he did.
He's a grad transfer, I believe.
I missed one thing. I apologize. I one mix,
but you were mostly right in that everybody else is back.
Fine. Who's the secondary player we should mention? Because I was looking up some stuff on him earlier.
If you're looking for one name
that
could make the jump, it's Trey Jenkins.
Why is that?
Well, I mean, not only was he already a second-team all-conference defender last year.
Yes.
I think, you know, given what we've seen from the defense overall over the last couple of years, they've sort of developed a reputation as being very opportunistic. And so, you know, even though he only had, you know, 2 interceptions last year, you know, I think you could look for him to be that kind of ball hawk safety that who was it 2 years ago that was in that same kind of position? I'm drawing a blank.
we'll pass.
I'll look it up. I'll look it up if you want to vamp for a moment.
I'm not sure about their secondary and defense. So, like, when you look at what they did for, like, points per game and everything, like, kind of go back to that, only 20 points, which is clearly good. But what this is one area where it's weird because their secondary for years have always been nobody passes against them. It's there's the one you're always in at under 100 yards per game they're allowing because their rush defense was so pitiful. This year they're actually more like middle of the pack. They're fine. Like they're almost 7 yards attempt given up. They were allowing teams to make plays on them to move the ball reasonably amount, but they couldn't get touchdowns, only 8 touchdowns. But then again, the interceptions, stuff like that, that's where they kind of need to improve. Cause that's, I think, on defense where they bring those guys back to get all the tackles, but I think they need that area to be more disruptive and not just be what they're doing 7 yards per play, which is middle of the pack. If they're going to take the next step and repeat or be close, they got to be top a little bit better because with all this talent back, even with Trey Webb leaving, that's something you'd want to see from guys who are as good as they were last year.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like I said, it helps that pretty much everybody else is coming back. Like Jenkins, of course, is like the name to watch.
Yeah, definitely.
But, you know, Jalen Arter's back. You know, he's got over 30, I think he's got over 30 starts in his career as a Spartan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Nehemiah Shelton's back. He's a solid number one corner with the potential for more. And now, you know, someone like Kenyon Reed can slot in at the other corner position. You know, we saw him, I think, mostly as a punt returner, but he saw more playing time as a defender kind of later in the year. You know, he could be a pretty – I like him. I think he could be a pretty good contributor for this defense. And even behind him, you know, other guys potentially in the mix, like, you know, Trey White is a senior. He's seen playing time over the last couple of years. You know, if he wins a starting role or is part of that rotation, maybe defend the slot or something like that, you know, he's not going to be a pushover. So, I mean, it may not be defense. I think this is true of every level of this defense. It may not be a unit that's stacked with all conference performers, but I don't think it necessarily needs to be because there aren't any obvious weak links that I can see.
The one thing I could see, like the pass breakups and pass defense, they're good. Turn those into interceptions with only 3 because we look at total pass breakups, the individual list – of the top 50, there's nowhere to be found a singular player. Because they have 23 breakups, 26 defended, which is good, but...
They also had 16 the year before, 16 interceptions.
Oh, they did? Oh, I didn't realize that. Yeah, because the secondary's always been great. Like, 18, oh no, it's San Diego State.
That's the kind of thing that's very hard to predict.
13, 16, 3, because if you look at those past couple years of pass breakups, it's a full year. They were last in pass breakups in 2018, pass defense near the bottom. 2018, they're more middle of the pack in pass breakups and pass defense defended. Mm-hmm. So those aren't always correlated, but they would like maybe break up, give them – again, it's also a truncated season because they played 8 games. Even 16 in 2019, they played no bowl game, 12 games. So you cut that in half, 8. They are well – even though 16 is really good, 8, you were thinking maybe 5 could have been done last year.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of if you drop down, because that is hard to predict over an interception per game. So 3 is underperforming, relatively speaking, for how many times they got a hand on the ball and knocked it down or almost picked it off.
Yeah. 23 pass breakups is good.
Yeah.
3 interceptions, not so much. But again, that's the kind of hard – that's the thing that's hard to predict, but it does correlate, which is more important.
Really quick, Hawaii 30 to 12.
There you go.
Huge. San Diego State 27-8.
That's the point, yeah.
Boise State, arguably slightly better, 21-3. Or then you have like 19-6.
Mm-hmm.
When you like, or 11-5 for Air Force.
Well, that top four right there tells you the entire story.
Yeah, it does. Change that a little bit, and you're going to be an elite defense. More than elite. Anything else on the defense we need to add here?
No, I think we're good.
It's mostly everybody's back. Again, for me, Trey Webb is not back, so don't mess that up again later down the road. That happened. Sorry. Missed one guy. What do we got for special teams? We already kind of mentioned the returner anyways, right, with Shamar Garrett?
Yeah, we brought up Shamar Garrett. We brought up Kenyon Reed. So I think their return game is above average with the potential for more. Yeah, I think, you know, unlike a lot of other teams in the conference, I think there may still be some questions as far as, you know, the kicking game and the punting game. Because Matthew Mercurio had a pretty good freshman year. Wasn't quite as effective last year, but maybe that was a consequence of the fact that they didn't really need him all that much last year.
Touchdowns only. Touchdowns only. Right?
Yeah, because he was 9 of 11, right? But his longest field goal was only 36 yards.
And maybe
that was more of a consequence of Brent Brennan and Kevin McGivin willing to be more aggressive with fourth down conversions. I don't know that that explains the whole thing, but, you know, they did have 13 fourth down attempts in 8 games, so maybe that explains at least part of it. But I think if they find themselves in a situation where, you know, maybe they do decide to, you know, maybe turn a 7-point lead into a 10-point lead rather than trying to push the envelope, you know, maybe seeing a little bit more of the leg that we saw in 2019 will help Spartans fans feel a little bit better, because I think he's firmly in like the top half of the conference as far as kickers are concerned.
Yeah.
But I think he's maybe a notch below some of the other guys we've talked about in these previous team preview podcasts. And punter is question mark.
Punter question mark.
Like that's something that seems to come up again and again every year. Cause you know, Elijah Fisher was not great. You know, he averaged under 40 yards per punt. I feel like that's the absolute floor for an effective FBS punter. So we'll see how it shakes out. You know, Chris Wood is still around. He was more of a kickoff specialist last year. They did bring in his transfer from Michigan, Will Hart. So, you know, he's a guy that in his time with the Wolverines, he averaged 44 yards a punt. So that might be something to look forward to. Like, that's the kind of minor thing that's sort of plagued the Spartans kind of in recent memory. I don't know how long it's been since they've had at least average punting, but that's another one of those things where even if the offense takes a mild step back, having a punter who could make up that difference is could potentially make them better in the long run.
Exactly. It'll be fine. There's just a couple areas on that, but schedule time?
Let's do it.
Schedule time. All right, so we look at who they have. Do you have an FCS minute on Southern Utah University?
Ooh, you know what? I wish I had the tab open.
Ah, I forgot. Because
I wrote about Southern Utah a few weeks ago, I think. You can definitely check out the article in more detail. Long story short, they had a truncated 2021 spring season. They were only 1-5. They were not that far away from being a little more competitive, though. Do you realize their 5 losses came by 15 points?
Yikes.
That's some hard luck right there.
They do have – Hero Sports is also a good resource. Their top 25 returning quarterbacks, number 23, Justin Miller, Southern Utah University.
Yeah, he was competent last year. You know, completed 65% of his passes, you know, nearly 7.5 yards per attempt, 15 touchdowns against 4 interceptions. He's not bad, and they've got a couple of quality defenders too. Give me a moment to come up with the pronunciation.
It's all good. I will say this here, future WAC member also.
That's true. So, you know, I guess if there's one name to potentially start thinking about now, it's their linebacker La'Akea Kaho Ohanohano Davis.
Good job.
He was a first-team all-Big Sky defender, 57 tackles last year, 9 tackles for loss, 7 sacks, 2 forced fumbles. He's a guy who could create some havoc if San Jose State's kind of sleepwalking in that game.
Yeah, take a deep breath to say that name every time.
That's true.
Just saying. Hey, but it'll be a win for San Jose State.
They're going to win that game.
Southern Utah has, late a couple years ago, they had actually 2 players drafted in the NFL.
Yeah, like, I mean, it's a solid couple of DBs.
They'll get transferred up to Utah or BYU occasionally, sometimes Utah State that do well. So they usually do pretty good. So then they have USC. Oh, boy. They go to the Coliseum. What, do they have a shot?
They have a shot.
They always have a shot to play the game, right?
I mean, they have a shot because the word that I've kind of settled upon to describe the Trojans of recent vintage is mercurial.
Okay.
Because they were 5-1 last year, but you never got the sense that anybody was actually happy about it.
Nope, the Arizona State game to start the year. Yikes.
That's true. And they only beat Arizona, the worst team in the Pac-12, by 4 points. Yeah. And they only beat UCLA by 5. So maybe they were a little bit lucky. They got shut down by Oregon in the Pac-12 game, ended up not deciding not to play in a bowl game. So, I mean, you know, with USC, it's never a question of talent because they have tons of talent on both sides of the ball. You know, Keaton Slovis, of course, is the guy everybody knows, the quarterback. You know, Drake London's a very good wide receiver. You know, they've got a couple of potential draft picks on defense. And oh, by the way, they just brought in the number one overall recruit anywhere in the country in Corey Foreman on the defensive lineman. He could start right away. It's just a matter of putting it all together from week to week, man. You never know what you're going to get with USC, which is why seemingly Clay Helton has been on the hot seat for
ever.
I don't know, 17 years now. It seems like. I mean, I'm being facetious, but that's what it feels like every time you talk to a USC fan. Like they are never happy, even though things are going.
Did they crush Penn State and Rose Bowl and they're still not happy? Wasn't that who they beat a while back?
That was 2016. Yeah.
Something like that, right after Coach, because they didn't hire Coach O, they went with him instead.
It might be because they got crushed in the Cotton Bowl the very next year and then lost to Iowa in the Holiday Bowl 2 years after that.
Yeah, well, we'll see. But USC, they're predicted to win the South in the Pac-12. Because Pac-12 media day is next week, as well, they'll have a couple guys all conference. This is a game where it's not going to be an easy play for USC to win.
Mm-hmm.
Because USC, like 2 years ago, lost to freaking BYU, who wasn't that good 2 years ago. It's a little fluky the way they lost. But it's a team where they probably – USC should win, like you mentioned. But I wouldn't be overly surprised if they somehow don't win this one.
USC always seems to lose one game that they should win.
Fingers crossed. Like
you mentioned the BYU game. Week one. The Cal game in 2018. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe the Notre Dame game in 2017, if you want to go that far back. They got blown out in that game against the Irish. I mean, I have this one pegged as a Spartans loss just because I worry a little bit about the talent disparity. Like, I don't think Santa's is going to be scared. I don't think they're going to get blown out by, like, three touchdowns or anything like that. So while it wouldn't shock me if they came away with a win, I don't think it's, like, likely. The most likely possibility.
So one good thing, this is USC's opener. Mm-hmm. San Jose State gets to play Southern Utah the week before.
Yeah.
Also, massive disrespect for this game. It's on the Pac-12 network.
Oof. And, I guess I'm not going to be able to watch it then.
I'll give you the FUBO login, okay?
Okay, there you go.
Free trial.
There you go.
You got that going on again all year long. Yeah, it's a 2 o'clock local kick. I guess this must have been announced recently, but what is this? These two teams combined for 2 losses last year, and you got a conference champion. Like, whatever. It's out of all the non-conference Pac-12 games, it's probably lower on the list, I'm guessing. For who plays who? I don't know, but it's a. Do we have an early line of this game? I know it's probably out there.
I haven't seen it recently.
How do you think USC would? Or excuse me, how do you think Spartans would win this game? Do they have to play their best game to get the victory?
They put pressure on Keaton Slovis.
Okay.
Because he's not. I mean, he's been good overall, but he's not infallible. And when he falters, that's when the Trojans are at their most vulnerable. So I think if San Jose State goes in and that defensive line plays up to its potential, you know, USC's bringing back, I think, 4 of their 5 starters on their offensive line. But it's not necessarily a given that they're going to be able to handle, you know, guys like, you know, Hall and Fajoko without any issues at all.
All right. I have the line for our buddies at BetMGM. Do you want to take a stab what the line is?
I'm going to say something like USC minus 10.
16.
I guess, you know what, I thought about it for a second after I said 10, and I realized that I should have said, like, 16 or 17.
Josh, go get the Spartans to love some love in Colorado.
Yeah.
What's your Venmo, Josh? I'll give you a few bucks, maybe. But that's way too many points. But like you said, USC's going to probably win, but I'm not going to be surprised if San Jose comes in and, like, look at the offensive firepower we discussed what they have. The offensive line's back. I know the receiver crew has some slight concerns. The quarterback plays almost fairly even, almost. Slovis is a bit better, but not by miles ahead. Yeah,
you know, I'm like, my father-in-law is a USC graduate, big USC fan. Mm-hmm. This is the kind of game he's going to hate watch.
Because it'll be like 21-16 or something, right?
Yeah.
Something lower scoring game. Spartans
it's
have the
It's going to be a good game, I think, yeah.
It's going to be an underrated game, that's what's the case. So then they go to Hawaii, early conference game. We have not done our Hawaii preview, so we do need to discuss this a bit, Matt. But also we should note their schedule at USC, off week, at Hawaii, then at Western Michigan.
not easy.
It's some travel there. So mm-hmm. Hawaii, who Siobhan Cordier, obviously QB, Calvin Turner, we all love, who is what? Was he, where did he come in our all conference? I don't have that in front of me. Do you recall where he landed?
I believe he was a second team selection.
At running back?
Yes.
Question mark, because he plays everywhere. He was, no, actually, no, sorry, I got it here. Looks like he was a third team, which is still fine.
Well, your running back is stacked.
Yeah,
don't
exactly.
Go yell at us.
Greg Bill deleted that tweet, so there's that too.
Don't yell at us too much, although, yeah.
He came at us 1 minute into it, and then it was out there. He goes, wait till I rush 1,800 yards to put win, and then he deleted it. It's like, dude, keep your name behind it, right?
I mean, that would not surprise me, but we'll focus on the Spartans for right now.
We will, but this is a matchup. Last year, what was it, 30-20, a close game, what they played last season. It's on the road this time in Hawaii. Like, I don't know why Hawaii's not getting too much respect, because they can move the ball. They're the defensive coordinators, again, I bring up all the time, they out-schemed Nevada by miles in that game to hold Carson Strong to not very many yards.
I imagine we'll talk about it more when we talk about the Warriors. I think it's because what we saw from them last year was a little bit different than what we had seen from them recently. And so it was sort of an up-and-down season where – you know, it's hard to tell kind of where the real Hawaii, like, will the real Hawaii please stand up, I guess you would say.
Exactly.
Like, you know, how real are the defensive improvements? Are they going to be able to kind of keep Siobhan Cordero from getting killed early in the game more often than not? Yeah. You know, what are they going to do to help, you know, Calvin Turner out at running back? Like, are they going to give Day-Day Hunter more carries or things like that? You know, how are they going to tinker with their run pass ratio? Because that was much different than what we've seen under Nick Rolovich recently. Which is not to say that I don't think Hawaii's going to be competitive. I think they're going to be right there with pretty much everybody else in the West Division. Like, right now, I have this one penciled as a San Jose State win. But, you know, like I said, I don't think it's necessarily going to be an easy win for them because Hawaii's got plenty of talent on it in its own right.
In our group DM chat, whatever, I adamantly still stand by this. Any team but UNLV can win the West Division.
I don't think
I would put Hawaii at the lower end of that, but I would not be surprised with how good Todd Graham, remember, he took Rice to a freaking bowl game who sucked butt forever. Like, he went to all these different programs and has always done well.
That's true.
So I'm not saying this year is like a huge jump to go like 10-2, but don't count them out in any game. I have it as a win for San Jose State. They go to Western Michigan, so they play a max foe in the Western Michigan Broncos, I want to say. Is that the correct term?
Yes.
Oh, excuse me. I was about to choke on something. I apologize for not leaving that and not changing that. So they go to the middle of the country. When's like the last time they traveled to go to like a Midwestern non-conference game? I guess exactly. I guess any Midwestern game is not conference.
That's a good question. Because I know that we've had a handful of MAC opponents across the Mountain West in recent years. I've only got Phil Steele in front of me. The last one that I can see is when they went to Iowa State back in 2016. That's about as close as I can get, I think.
So Western Michigan is usually a pretty good team. Usually decent. They're not bad by any stretch. Within the MAC, is MAC any good anymore? Like, NIU sucked it up. Ball State was really good last year. Toledo will be good. I don't think Western Michigan is going to be in that same category, do you?
Well, okay, with apologies to Bowling Green.
Sorry. Whatever.
Apparently, who are apparently 1,000-1 Ooh. Long shots to win the MAC.
Bowling Green?
Yes.
Okay.
1,000-1
What are you saying? You put some money on Matt and
text Josh? Pretty garbage. So but this is not, of course, about the Falcons. Western Michigan is pretty good, though.
Yeah.
Like, and we talked about Brett McMurphy earlier and Mountain West odds. Western Michigan is 5-1 to win the MAC.
Pretty good.
Because when you look at what they did last year, you know, they were, of course, you know, 4-2, not necessarily where they wanted to be. But, you know, they had a late lead against Ball State in their finale, lost by 3. You know, they gave up 53 points to Eastern Michigan, even though they scored 42, let that one get away from them a little bit. But
Caleb pretty good QB.
This team has a lot of similarities to San Jose State when you really start digging in on them. And you mentioned Ellaby. He might be maybe the best quarterback in the group of five that absolutely no one talks about.
I mean, that's not Carson Strong.
I mean, did you see what he actually did last year?
Yeah, like right here, here's a stat for Bill C where this is, was it QB per 100 dropbacks, I guess? Mm-hmm. I don't know what this stat really means because here are last year's top three FBS QBs per any, whatever this is. But he's basically sandwiched between Mac Jones and Zach Wilson. He has
Just throw the traditional stat line out there real quick. 1,715 passing yards, 65% completion rate, 18 touchdowns, 2 interceptions.
How many games again did they play?
They played 6 games.
Okay, that's pretty good. Yeah, I was trying to look at that stat. I'm like, this, I don't know what this means. I'm like, I'll just say it and sound like an idiot. But when you say he's between those two players, that's pretty good. But
I mean, they are losing Dwayne Eskridge to the NFL.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're also bringing back literally everybody else. Like San Jose State, they're bringing back pretty much all of their offensive line, 4 starters back from last year. And I think they're also bringing back 10 starters on defense as well. And that is really where this game is going to hinge, is whether or not the Broncos have what it takes to take a step forward on defense. Because, you know, other than their season opening win against Akron last year, you look at what they actually accomplished on that side of the ball. They gave up 38 points to Toledo in a close win. They gave up 27 points to a winless Northern Illinois team. They gave up 44 to Central Michigan. And nobody on the team had more than 2.5 sacks. Or excuse me, they had one player with 4 sacks, and nobody else had more than 2.5. So there's work to be done on that side of the ball. But if San Jose State's not careful, if they aren't prepared, this is a team that could score on anybody in the MAC and could definitely put up some points against the Spartans.
They could also lose their top 3 receivers, including Eskridge, so there's that. But yeah, score, like the point thing where – here's it's interesting what Bill C says too. Not including their huge victory over Akron, their average score in the other 5 games was a virtual tie, 38.4 to 38.4. So
that explains a lot, yeah.
So, like, this could be, like, a 50-40 game. Or, you know, I mean, like, there's maybe not that high, but it could be first to 35 to win, first to 40 to win.
The only reason I would say it wouldn't be is that we know San Jose State's going to be a lot better on defense than Western Michigan is.
Well, it's true. I just – if their offense gets going with Ellaby and everything.
So, like, I look at this game through the lens of if I had to trust one team to make a critical stop, who would it be?
San Jose State.
And that's why I have them winning this game.
That's a good point. I still think they could break through and score, but it may not be like last year, but you're right. Like, whatever, has the best unit, quarterback's the same. The receiving, returning production looks fairly similar.
This is low key one of the games in non conference play that I'm looking forward to the most.
All right. New Mexico State victory, right?
That's a win.
Okay. Then here's their big stretch of league play. This is where they go, which is good. Their schedule eases up. Every other week is a home and road. At CSU, host San Diego State, at UNLV, Wyoming, at Nevada, Utah State, Fresno at home. That stretch, there's no outside, like there's no, I guess Wyoming, Nevada is a pretty tough back-to-back, but there's no back-to-back games where they need to freak out about 2 very difficult games. Because CSU, San Diego State, not terribly. We discussed CSU. I have that as a win for San Jose State because I don't trust Colorado State's offense. It's almost like the game we just talked about, Western Michigan.
Same.
The Rams defense will provide a challenge, but I don't see their offense moving the ball at all too much against this Spartans defense. So that's a win for me. I have San Diego State as a loss. I'm hesitant, and I'm going to keep it that for now, but I think when we discussed before, it's mostly because of what their running game could potentially be. If it's what it typically is, that's where it's for any game for San Diego State. Quarterback play, which is still a complete mess. But if Greg Bell is that good and what he did the first half last, like all those big runs versus Hawaii, and their defense is always solid, that's where I think this could be a tough matchup for. And it's also, what's their state? In the Bank Credit Union, whatever, San Jose State. I started to think what it was. I'm like, I know it's C something. I don't know how to pronounce it. But that's a toss-up game. But I'm leaning Aztecs just because I think maybe I trust them more and talked about it. But doing more research on the Spartans, I probably would switch back. But I don't want to make any changes right now. But that's going to be another game. If the running game goes well for San Diego State, if their quarterback play is at least average, it's going to be a tough one.
See, I think the difference between Colorado State and San Diego State, and I have those both as San Jose State wins, versus teams that they play later in their non-conference schedule, is, you know, I think to myself, which teams are going to combine strong defense with an offense that actually scares me. And I think that, you know, when I think of the Rams and I think of the Aztecs against this particular Spartans team, I don't really see it. Like, I think that both teams will be competitive, but I have the Spartans winning both of those. I have them winning the game on the road at UNLV. But then I also have them losing those back-to-back games at home versus Wyoming and at Nevada.
You think it's weird? I have them winning that hosting Wyoming.
because I see a little more potential in the Cowboys offense. And I think that Nevada will be able to – I don't think they're going to fall victim to the same kinds of big play momentum changers in that game that ultimately turned the tide, and that's in the second half last year. So, again, all these games are going to be competitive, but I see San Jose State faring a little better in the first half of their schedule than in the second.
I do, too. It's a little more difficult because Wyoming, Nevada, and Fresno State, those three of Final Four are really tough games.
Mm-hmm.
And San Diego State's no pushover either.
That's true.
And CSU probably should be a fairly easy win. I bet that could be a game where they pull away late because the defense finally fades through for the Rams.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not easy, but every other week home road. I had them losing to Nevada as well. I had them beating Utah State, but we mentioned Utah State. It's a pretty interesting team with Logan Bonner and all that stuff. But anything we know, like week eight on, like, you mentioned Wyoming's offense, we're optimistic. We'll know for sure how much better it would be or should be or is, actually.
Yeah.
Right now, it's like the hope is that they'll pass more. That's their plan to pass more. But when you have arguably the best player in the conference, Xavier Valade, why pass more than you need to?
Yeah. I mean, I tend to assume the best in these predictions.
Me too.
And then I hedge a little bit. and then I see where I end up.
What do you got for Fresno State then?
San Jose State's kind of had the Bulldogs number over the last few years. Which I hate to say, but it's true.
Apologies, but yeah, you're not wrong. I just as a loss. We discussed Fresno a couple shows ago. I just like because I know we mentioned defense for Fresno State, but offense, it's going to be really good. Like this quarterback matchup, Jake Haener, Nick Starkle, pretty competitive, pretty even. The running game clearly favors, or the running back position clearly favors Fresno State, Ronnie Rivers. But we'll see what the Spartans can do with their possibly trio receiving group. Both younger guys. Fresno had a bunch of guys step up last year to play well. But I just, this is going to be another one of those games like this. Like we mentioned, what games could decide the West Division? Like that, this could be one of those games potentially. Because San Jose State, again, the West is going to be crazy good. But I have it as, like you mentioned last time we talked about the Bulldogs in this game, I have Fresno winning. Is that where you kind of stand on this as well? Or were you still thinking Fresno is going to get or Spartans are going to get the best of them?
See, to me, I think you talk about the offense. The one thing you didn't mention was the offensive line.
I know. Yeah, that was just for Fresno.
And I think that Fresno State's fortunes are really going to rise and fall on how cohesive that offensive line is, because I think if they hold together and they're good, then, you know, the record that I projected for them in their podcast is going to be too low. But if they aren't, then this is the kind of game that San Jose State should win pretty comfortably.
Do you think they're comfortably?
I could see them winning by 10 points, yeah.
I wouldn't call 10 points comfortable.
I think it'll be closer than that. But I think the San Jose State is going to be able to keep the Valley Trophy in San Jose.
Okay. I don't know. I think the offensive line at this point, it's like with Wyoming's offense. We will know a lot. But right now, you make good points to reason why you would take them or not take them. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because they, like, look what happened last year. Ronnie Rivers got hurt. Jake Kaner was scrambling for his life occasionally. This will be, again, a key game. Looking at the final games of the year, like what could be like a division title type of game, that's one of the few, probably because there's a bunch of, I guess, Boise, San Diego State, maybe.
Interdivision games and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, just make them, keep them the same side. What are you doing? Why change a good thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
They did a couple years ago. Anything else to add? Oh, I guess record-wise, 8-4 for me.
I've got them at 9-3.
Three conference losses for me.
I have 9-3, 6-2 in conference.
6-2, 5-3. Do you think it's possible a three-loss team could win the West Division?
Yes.
Tiebreakers galore because of that.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote an article about this, I want to say a week ago when we record this. Have you seen, like, the F-plus projections for the West?
They're wild.
It's a mess. If you want to see them for yourself, you can read the article. And I would further encourage you to just purchase the new Football Outsiders Almanac, yes. Available both digital and in hard copy, footballoutsiders.com.
Not a paid ad.
Yeah, not a paid ad. It just comes recommended. I buy it every year. But, you know, San Jose State is definitely going to be in the mix. And so it would not shock me, like, if they battle week in and week out, they take a couple lumps, but they dish out a couple lumps, especially within division play, and they end up on top anyway.
I think it's a good possibility. This division is going to be so fun to watch because I stand by it. Any team could win except for UNLV. Sorry, Rebels. Sorry, coaches. But we'll see what happens. Like, San Jose State, I feel more optimistic after researching and listening to you talk about it that might be touch low because I could see them beating San Diego State and Fresno State possibly. Nevada, I don't think that's going to be the case. But, like, could they win 10 games?
Yes.
I'm not going to put it out there. Likely? No. But when you look at the talent-wise of who they play, the only two teams I say that are with more talent overall is probably USC and Nevada. And Nevada's fairly close.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And that's where I'm sitting 8-4 because, again, as you always say, undefeated is difficult. And anything else to add? 8-4 for me, 9-3 for you?
I think we're good.
Okay, that's good. This show, I like how we ended on a hard stop. All right, we're done. We're good. But we now have three teams left. We still need to – let's see if I can get it right this time. We still need to talk Hawaii.
Yes.
We still need to talk UNLV.
Mm-hmm.
And – oh, boy, who am I missing here?
Missing New Mexico.
Sorry, Roger. New Mexico fans are yelling at me. It's the Lobos, you idiot. It's New Mexico. We have Media Day this week. We'll have another extra podcast to discuss that, even though we try to make these super timely – or timeless, I should say, to listen whenever. But we're getting there, Matt. Fall camp starting soon. Our offensive, defensive team previews are coming out. Top 50 is going down. Watch list season. I have a couple of coach hot seat rankings, QB rankings are going to come out later this next couple weeks. So football is basically here. And check us out, MWR.com, our website, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all that fun stuff. Just search Mountain West Wire. And we'll be back next time. And like our show, tell people about it. I think we do a reasonably good job. Adequate, right?
We do our best.
There's a good answer because I'll mess up Trey Webb every so often, but it happens. We're not the paid professionals.
It's the off season. We're rounding our way in form.
And when I'm looking at my Athlon for a minute, and I see that I'm like, oh crap. All right, well, we'll be back next time. So we'll not end on a downer, but check us out everywhere. Get our stuff. Twitter. We're pretty active on there. So if you want to fight with us, it's also fighting season a little bit too, right? With all these preseason projections.
Yes, it is.
So it's always fun on Twitter. So we'll see you next time.